resetting relations with royalty. The US president has visited a kingdom he once promised to make a pariah. Joe Biden says his trip to Saudi Arabia is worth the political cost. But what does he hope to gain? And does this visit pave the way to a new partnership with this region? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the programme. I'm Bernard Smith. 3 years ago, Joe Biden threatened to make Saudi Arabia pay the price for the killing of a journalist. Now, as the US president, he's on a charm offensive. Biden needs the kingdom to pump more oil to take the pressure off fuel prices. He's declared that significant business was accomplished in Jeddah on Friday. But any positive developments from those meetings have been overshadowed by criticism of Biden's visit to the kingdom and his interactions with the Crown Prince. Our White House correspondent Kimberly Halkett reports.
US President Joe Biden arrived in Saudi Arabia to a subdued reception. That may have been because of his past comments about the kingdom.
We were going to, in fact, make them pay the price and make them, in fact, the pariah that they are.
A pledge he made as a presidential candidate after a CIA report suggested the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman may have ordered the 2018 killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. The president's goal is to reset relations and convince the kingdom to pump more oil to bring down fuel prices in the United States.
I'm doing all I can to increase the supply for the United States of America, which I expect to happen.
But strained ties have made that a challenge evident as Biden arrived at the Saudi palace offering the Crown Prince just a fist bump, a moment not well received back in the United States. Khashoggi's publisher, Fred Ryan at The Washington Post, calling it shameful, delivering MBS the redemption he was desperately seeking. And Khashoggi's fiance warning Biden that the blood of any future victim will be on his hands.
I'm sorry she feels that way. I was straightforward back then. I was straightforward today. He basically said that he was not personally responsible for it. I indicated I thought he was.
Earlier in Biden's meeting with the Crown Prince, the press confronted both men.
Jamal Khashoggi, will you apologize to his family, sir?
Thank you, guys.
President Biden, is Saudi Arabia still on fire? President Biden.
This was the response of the Crown Prince. He appeared to smirk. A serious question left unanswered, with reporters then ushered out. Kimberly Halkett, Al Jazeera.
Saudi Arabia and the US have a long-standing strategic partnership. It dates back to 1945, when the US agreed to provide security to Saudi rulers in exchange for access to oil reserves. In 1973, in the Israel-Palestine War, Riyadh imposed an oil embargo on countries backing Israel, including the US. In the 90s, during the Gulf War against Saddam Hussein, Saudi Arabia served as a base for hundreds of thousands of American troops. But the 9/11 attacks were a setback in relations. 15 of the 19 hijackers were Saudis. And then 4 years ago, the US sanctioned the kingdom in response to the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Let's bring in our guests. In Riyadh, we have Abdulaziz Alghashian. He's a research fellow at Project SEPAD, focusing on Saudi foreign policy. In Washington, D.C., Doug Bandow is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. And in London, Zayed Belbaji is a managing partner at Hardcastle Advisory, a political consulting firm. Welcome to you all. Abdulaziz, I'll start with you first in Riyadh. What have the Saudis got out of this visit by Biden, and specifically Mohammed bin Salman?
Well, I would say good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all your viewers. I think they got a lot. I think, you know, one of the things that came about in the wake of the Russian war on the Ukraine was this notion that, of course, no matter how much people speak about oil and moving away from oil, that oil is still a very important commodity. And by virtue or by definition, then Saudi Arabia is still very important and not just an important player, but an important global player. And I think this is what has been achieved so far. So moreover, I think it asserted itself also as a regional player. Okay. It was able to collect these players. And therefore, you know, this speaks to a bit more on the Saudi, it was a projection, I could say, of a Saudi leadership still in the region. And we could see that from the statements coming out of the GCC plus summits.
All right. Doug, this was embarrassing for Joe Biden, isn't it, having to go cap in hand to the Saudis? But as Abdulaziz says, oil still matters.
Yes, the president was rather desperate to try to find increased sources of oil production. But it does look like a major climb down for him. And it certainly left a number of American analysts wondering which is a superpower, that the United States looks rather weak and submissive in a situation like this. It certainly is important that the president be able to point to some benefit in terms of oil production, because prices of oil and energy obviously are very important in the American people's minds with an election upcoming. But I think the image will be hard for him to escape. And his claim to be committed to human rights, I think, has taken a major beating, and that will hurt him among progressives in the Democratic Party especially.
Okay. Zayed, fist bump or handshake, it was about the visuals for Mohammed bin Salman, was it? Is Saudi Arabia not a pariah anymore?
Well, I think the Saudis definitely got more out of this than the Americans. The issue is here is that the president was led by interests over values. This was very much a case of realpolitik, and the US just had to let its interests supersede what it believed. Whether it's a come down, like you just mentioned, I don't think so. I mean, both sides were keen to kind of measure the optics of this way in advance. The meetings were very much, you know, administered beforehand. The cameras that were allowed, the speakers, etc. The president has been keen to say that this was mostly a visit to see the GCC with the regional countries and not a bilateral with the Saudis.
Abdulaziz, the Saudi Arabia's Minister of State for Foreign Affairs, Adel Al Jubayr, said that the killing of Jamal Khashoggi was a terrible mistake. But it's time the two countries have moved on. Is it time to move on?
Yes, I absolutely think it is time to move on. And quite frankly, I think the both states have moved on. But there still remained an element of frostiness at that elite level. And I think, you know, between Joseph Biden and, of course, the Crown Prince, there was still that frostiness, and I still don't think that frostiness will thaw immediately. And I think, as Zayed mentioned, and I think he mentioned it very well, the fact that Joseph Biden was trying to display his framing of the trip to Saudi Arabia, that this is not really about going to Saudi Arabia, this is actually going to meet the GCC states, GCC plus, this is about somehow Israel, and, you know, trying to make peace with Israel and Arab nations. I think that left a bitter taste in the Saudi ruling elite's mouths. And I think, you know, that is precisely why this thawing at the elite level will take some time now.
Doug, clearly the White House... Okay. Doug, clearly the White House knew there would be a political cost to this meeting, but what was the alternative?
Well, they could have, for example, made an arrangement with Venezuela to bring Venezuelan oil back on. Or if they had been acting more quickly last year to restart negotiations with Iran, one could imagine bringing Iranian oil on. You know, and the other is to recognize the amount of oil they are likely to get over the time frame they're likely to get from Saudi Arabia and the Emirates. It's not clear to me is going to have a major impact on oil prices. The problem for the president is trying to frame this as going to see the GCC as believed by no one in Washington. That Kuwait is a wonderful country, but that's not why the president went there, to meet with the emir. this was very clearly sold as a meeting with the Saudis. And the fact the president emphasized so much the issue of oil, I think, you know, places that it's hard for him to escape by pointing to Israel and other issues, which will make it harder for him. And there's great disappointment with him within some important sectors of his own party, and that might cut back on the electoral benefit that he's looking for.
We'll come to Israel in a moment, but Zayed, did the Americans get anything out of this? Yes, the commitment to pump oil will only increase it in the long term by about 13 million barrels. Is there going to be any significant difference for the US in terms of oil prices on that increased pumping?
No, I think it's more of a public relations victory. Midterms are on the horizon. The president's approval ratings are only slightly higher than what the very unpopular President Trump's ratings were at the similar time in his presidency. Similarly, 600 barrels a day extra that has been muted is only a half, just over a half, of global demand. So I don't think it's huge in that respect. But to have come home saying, you know, I've spoken to the Saudis, I'm going to get the oil, that's almost a false narrative, because essentially prices have been going down anyway for the last 30 days. And, you know, in mid-August, we can expect the important psychological $4 threshold. But what this is mostly about, and I think a lot of the commentators have missed in the analysis of this, is that the same administration that Biden was a part of 4 years ago lost a lot of ground in the region and elsewhere. And I think a lot about this trip is about making up that ground, especially from a geopolitical perspective, and not leaving this, you know, gaping wide vacuum for Russia and China. A lot of this visit should be seen through that prism, and the Americans essentially playing catch up. And it's not a bad idea. I mean, the integration of Iraq into the wider GCC electricity network is a great, you know, step in that direction to kind of take it out of Iran's orbit slowly but surely. Iraq will obviously be at the summit today, but a lot of this is about geopolitics, because the US has really lost ground in the region and elsewhere, as we've seen in Eastern Europe as well. And part of that is the Obama administration's, you know, the result of the Obama administration's policies.
OK, well, Abdulaziz, Joe Biden said when he addressed the meeting on Saturday, he said, Washington's not walking away. We're not going to leave a vacuum to be filled by Russia, China or Iran. Is he doing enough now to make amends, to make good with the Gulf states, with Saudi Arabia and its partners?
Well, I think personally he's saying the right things. And moreover, I think the United States administrations before have always said the right things. I don't necessarily think he said anything new. What we heard were a lot of statements that of principles, of declarations and statements of principles. But, you know, time will tell. I think just to expand upon what Zayed mentioned, indeed, there is this notion that there is this vacuum. And I think it's been prominent in the past years, especially after the Arab Spring, et cetera, where people are talking about this idea of an American withdrawal. I personally don't think America is withdrawing to that extent. Moreover, I think this kind of summit lent itself as an opportunity for both Saudi Arabia, the GCC plus, and the United States to assert and reinforce that strategic partnership. So time will tell how this will develop.
Doug, if this visit, as you suggest, sort of shows a diminishing of American power, it has, though, been successful for Israel, hasn't it? Biden's a big friend of Israel, and this has been a very good visit for Israel.
Well, yes, what this demonstrates is that support for Israel politically in the U.S. is bipartisan. And while there is some shakiness on the Democratic side with progressives, who are much more interested in taking up the cause of Palestinian human rights, that among establishment Democrats, you know, are very concerned about maintaining this commitment, as well as the Republican Party. I mean, the problem is that in the short term, that is certainly advantageous politically. The longer term, I do think the question is what happens in Israel is very important. And it's going toward another election, which will undoubtedly result in a result more to the right. And the question is, what happens to Palestinians? By some estimates, there are currently more Arabs between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean than Jews. So the question of how Israel manages to be both democratic and Jewish and to find some settlement for millions of people who are under occupation is a very important issue that could be explosive. And I don't think anything was advanced by this trip. The president's made an effort, visited the West Bank, but I don't think that was seen as very much by the Palestinians. And I think that is an issue that has got to be addressed at some time.
But Zayed, granting airspace to Israeli aircraft to fly over Saudi Arabia, that's a prize for the Israelis, isn't it? That's progress.
It's a small step. It's a small step for Israel, probably a larger step for the region. It's also just recognizing what already happens via third countries. There are Arab Jews and there are Palestinians that must perform the pilgrimage in Saudi Arabia, and there's a way for them to go. But is this some sort of precursor of a blanket acceptance of the Abraham Accords? Most definitely not. I think there are some decision makers in Israel that were able to, you know, move quite well forward with the Abraham Accords for very little in response on the Palestinian question. The president made a fleeting visit to the West Bank, and he, you know, made the right noises. He wanted a Palestinian state which was viable, independent, sovereign, and importantly, contiguous. But those are just, you know, making the right noises. Essentially, great progress needs to be made on that issue for a big step towards regional peace. So I don't think Israel got too much out of this. And again, like Doug just said, which Israel? The country has had 5 elections in 3 years. It's most likely going to move to Likud. Remarkably, Netanyahu may even come back, despite his tarnished legacy, which is a completely different Israel that the Arab world will be dealing with. And I think it's important to couch this visit within those circumstances.
Well, what happens in the Israeli election could keep us busy for many, many other programmes. But Abdulaziz, do you think that there is a chance that this visit will bring a normalisation ultimately in relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia?
No, I don't think so. And I think, as Ziad mentioned, that it is a very small step that has taken place. Moreover, I think it's important to contextualize this step. You know, if we look back at the Abraham Accords, I think one of the things that can be taken away from it is that it has shifted the burden of concessions from Israeli concessions to the United States. In other words, now one of the aspects that is part of the calculation is not just to what extent is there great progress on the Palestinian-Israeli issue, but also who is the right person in the White House. And I think, quite frankly, the flyover rights, as Doug mentioned earlier, that it's very important for Biden to be on the side or to have the pro-Israeli contingencies in the United States be on a side in the elections. Therefore, these flyover rights should be considered as a gesture from the Saudi ruling elite to Biden and just say, listen, go ahead. This is our gesture to turn a new page. You could politicize this as you want. But in regards to normalization, there are still a lot of things that need to be done. And one of these things, as I mentioned earlier, was the right person in the White House. And I don't think Joe Biden is the one that the Saudi ruling elite want to have as the person to have this massive achievement.
All right. Doug, normalization of relations with Israel notwithstanding, does the US need to build a new security umbrella in the Middle East that does include Israel, Egypt and the Gulf states?
Well, certainly from an American standpoint, it would be helpful to have a balance of power in the region where it doesn't necessarily expect American military involvement for any particular contingency. You know, the American people are rather tired of Mideast wars. So being able to tie together Israel and the Emirates and Saudi Arabia and presumably the other GCC members, you know, is an opportunity to help create some form of collective security with a significant military power that is Israel, that might be able to at least initially handle, you know, problems that arise with a somewhat lesser expectation of American involvement or at least garrisons on station. So I think this has a potential security benefit for the United States to help stabilize the Middle East without quite the same expectation of American involvement.
Zayed, I see you nodding away there. Do you see this as bringing security benefits to the US and the region, this meeting?
I don't see it bringing it, but it has the potential to. You will have heard the King of Jordan's muted calls last week for a regional NATO. That's a fantastic idea, especially in the context of an eventual US withdrawal. You'll, of course, recall the British withdrawal east of Suez. For that to work, for a regional, you know, military alliance to work, it must involve all parties, including the Iranians, the Turks, the Israelis, much as, you know, NATO brought together the French and the Germans, etc. Without that, it could never work, though the idea in principle is fantastic, because these countries cannot continue to outsource their security to, you know, faraway security partners.
Doug, is this a deliberate pivot of the US back to the Middle East when once people would have called for Gulf countries to look after their own security? The US seems to be coming back in. Is that what you see?
Well, I wouldn't quite call it a pivot. I think this administration is still convinced that long term, the US has to focus on China, because China is the one country on earth that we would call a potential peer competitor, you know, an equal economically and an equal militarily, with extraordinary opportunities for military mischief in an important region. So it's going to have to concentrate ultimately on Asia. But I think it wants to show the Middle East that the Middle East is not forgotten, and that the US is able to pay attention to the Middle East, even as it might make larger changes in its foreign policy. You know, it wants its friends in the region to recognize the US is not disappearing, that there may be changes in the future, but that doesn't mean a lack of interest or a lack of attention.
Okay. And Abdulaziz, I just want to talk quickly a little bit about Yemen, one of the worst humanitarian crises the world has seen. We have managed to have a 15-week-long ceasefire out of this. Is this a positive that the Americans can take out of this meeting, something they hope to prolong as well, given the Saudis' real desire to end this conflict?
Well, I don't think it's just a desire and a benefit for the United States to continue. I think certainly the benefit, you know, the main benefit that the United States, and forgive me for being very pessimistic here, but is to claim the fact that it tried and it induced this particular kind of ceasefire. But I think, as you mentioned in your question, indeed, for a very long time, Saudi has tried to seek a Yemeni solution to this situation. And I think, you know, on the ground, at times, you know, that's very, very difficult. So I think, indeed, this is welcome. And I think the fact that, you know, a lot of people will try to continue expanding upon this development because it's for the sake of the region, you know, and it's for the sake of a prosperous region. So, indeed, we could expect a lot of politicization of this. We could expect a lot of people claiming that they induced this. But, indeed, it is in the benefit of all people to see this ceasefire continue, and long may it continue to lead to a prosperous Yemen.
Okay.
Inshallah.
As we begin to wrap up, Zayed, I'd just like to ask you to touch on something that Doug mentioned at the beginning of the programme, this apparent appearance of American power diminishing. And do you see that when Biden comes in, the mood of Biden's visit, does that suggest to you that America, faced with a climbing resurgent China, faced with Russia, is a diminished power in the region?
I think diminishing as opposed to diminished. And what's extraordinary is the same administration that Biden was a part of previously was actually making its way away from energy dependency from the region. Local fracking in the states had given, you know, the United States an opportunity to become less exposed. As the Saudis quite smartly now, when you look back at it, drove those frackers out of the market, and also fracking became environmentally controversial, the US has now made itself more vulnerable to international supplies, for example, those from the Gulf. So from that perspective, I think it was not something that any American president expected to be doing. The broad long-term trajectory was that the region was becoming less important for US decision makers, but now it seems to have resurged in importance. In terms of a diminishing power, you only have to look at the increased military spending of China. What's interesting and a real highlight for me from this trip was the commitment to the global partnership for infrastructure. So that is a direct form of brinkmanship against the China Belt and Road Initiative, where the US is trying to combat the influence that that China has in developing countries. So it's trying to get itself out of the hole that it's in.
OK, we're out of time, unfortunately, but thanks to our guests, to Abdulaziz Al-Ghashan, to Doug Bandow and Zayed Belbaji, and thank you, too, for watching. You can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For more debate, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. We are at AJInsideStory. From me, Bernard Smith, and the whole team here, bye for now.